This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guests this morning are Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment, a company dedicated to socially responsible investing and shareholder advocacy. Bruce and Larry were most recently guests on the sustainability segment in June of 2007 and told us about recent successes of shareholder advocacy in creating positive change in publicly traded corporations. Bruce Herbert and Larry Doors are here today to give us an update on progress made since then and to evaluate the accomplishments of shareholder advocacy in this year's 2008 proxy season. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
Thanks, Diane.
Would you begin by reminding us of the purpose of socially responsible investment?
Well, really, socially responsible investment, or SRI as we call it, is the process of allowing people and institutions to merge their values with their investing. And so, whether it's an SRI mutual fund or a money manager like Newground, we help people to meet their financial goals, but to do so in a way that's consistent with the larger mission in life.
Would you remind us also of the definition of shareholder advocacy and explain how shareholder advocacy fits into social investing as a whole?
Mm-hmm. Social investment is often described as a stool with three legs. And one leg is screening, and that's avoidance. Like you might have a screen to avoid tobacco-producing companies or military defense contractors or a whole array of other things. The second leg is community investment, or microcredit lending is often known as. And that is a process of allowing very necessary banking services and capital access to people or groups who traditionally have been excluded, whether it's a poor, women, regions of the world. And the third leg of the three-leg stool is shareholder engagement. And rather than avoidance, that is actually using your rights as a shareholder to engage companies, to actively dialogue with senior management about improving their practices and really about addressing the issues that arise in their operations both here and overseas.
How large a role does socially responsible investing currently play in overall investing?
Well, it really has been growing. In short terms, you can say that basically $1 in $9 that's professionally managed is managed with a social factor involved. The Social Investment Forum publishes every 2 years what they call the Trends Report, and the last was 2007, the end of 2007. And so the 2007 Trends Report identifies a variety of different factors, including rising institutional investor interest, you know, like the major pension funds of the states and cities and unions and the like, and then growing demand for climate-related renewable energy alternatives, and then real concerns about what's happening in Sudan and the humanitarian crises of various sorts around the world, and also the emergence of new products and opportunities, easier ways of accessing this sort of thing. So right now, more than $2 trillion is invested socially, $2.7 trillion.
Who or which groups are currently most active in the shareholder advocacy movement?
A lot of the leadership comes from the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, which is an umbrella group of mostly faith-based organizations who use all of their, in this case, about $110 billion under management for engagement purposes. So ICCR is a real leader there. And one of the things that we're also seeing is that the bigger pension funds, whether we're talking about CalPERS or the state of Connecticut or city of New York, some of these pension funds have become very active and are looking to protect the interests of their beneficiaries through shareholder engagement. Then there are the socially responsible mutual funds like Calvert and Domini and Green Century, who are also quite involved. And then there are a small number of organizations such as our own company, Newground, who get involved on behalf of our clients as shareholder advocates.
One of the things I'll add is that ICCR has been at this a long time. More than 25, close to 30 years now, and they really created the modern phase of the social investment movement. Social investment really started with the churches back in the 20s with the screening, the avoidance of certain types of companies or activities, but the active engagement, the more the shareholder engagement side and the community investment side came more in the modern time through ICCR. And I had the great pleasure of serving on their governing board for a number of years and helping to co-found the Northwest arm of ICCR called the Northwest Coalition for Responsible Investment. And in terms of the growth of social investment, of course, we've seen a lot of market turmoil and so forth. But from the 2005 to 2007 period covered by the most recent trends report, the growth of social investment has been about 18% in that period of time, whereas investing as a whole, measured by mutual funds and the like, is less than 3%. So in terms of the relative rate of growth, social investment is really catching on because it makes sense, makes good economic sense. What's fascinating to me now is seeing the so-called Wall Street managers who are using social screens because they give rise to or give insight into financial situations of a company.
What are some highlights of the 2008 proxy season for shareholder advocacy?
Well, it really is an improving climate all across the board for shareholder advocates. And again, referring to the Social Investment Forum's trends report, the average level of shareholder support for resolutions on social and environmental issues increased 57% between 2005 and 2007, so that the average resolution now garners a 15.4% vote. You know, yes, I understand that that's not a majority, but that's very, very substantial when you think about the value of the shares that are taking these issues seriously and are pressing management, because almost universally, these are cases where management is recommending against the resolution that's come all the way to a vote. And so the fact that on average, 15% of shareholders are rejecting the point of view, actively rejecting the point of view of management, is, you know, it's pretty important. So all the way across the board, because we're having bigger allies involved, because more of the mainstream investors are recognizing that looking at environmental and social issues as bottom line issues makes sense, it's just become a much more successful and effective process. And that's something that we've seen year after year now for a number of years.
And if I may, I want to add and put into context those voting figures. Because the reality is there are 100% of shares, but the majority of shares often are owned directly or controlled indirectly by management. So they cannot be expected to vote in favor of shareholder-sponsored proposals, because the process, if a shareholder puts something forward that management likes, they're going to do it, and it never shows up as a vote. So by definition, anything that appears in the proxy is going to be something of an adversarial, we recommend against it, says the board, and the shareholders say, we think it's a good idea. The Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, whose rules govern this whole process of engagement, mandate that if a shareholder proposal is presented, in the first year, if it receives simply a 3% vote, that is significant enough to warrant automatic resubmission. And that 3%, because when you think of all the shares that are directly or indirectly controlled by management, they're not going to be in the vote for a resolution. And then the second, how many shareholders receive the proxy? And then, boy, I'd love to get around to reading this big, thick, legally written document, but they just throw it away. So in terms of the shares that are voted, that are informed, and are independent, a 3% vote is a significant vote. And often, quite often, that is a large enough vote in the first year that management then seeks active dialogue and resolution of the issue with the proponents of the proposal. So when we talk about 6, 9, 10, 15%, that is really quite significant. And one added point is there are three categories of vote. There's a vote against a resolution, there's a vote for a resolution, there's also an abstention. And that's where somebody has read the resolution, maybe they feel like they don't know quite enough about it to make an informed decision, but they are not persuaded by management's recommendation, stout recommendation, to vote against it. So when you add the for votes and the abstain votes, you actually see a much clearer picture of the number of shareholders that do not support management's perspective. And so those figures sometimes are double the numbers that we're talking about here in terms of the for votes. And so that context is critical for investors to understand. The power of the investor voice is much larger than would be understood simply by looking at the numbers without knowing the context. And believe you me, the companies, whenever they report these numbers, report them in a way to make it look like, oh, the resounding number of shareholders don't support this. You know, it's a failed cause. But that really is not the case.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2008 proxy season. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Which issues or topics have been most at the forefront during the 2008 proxy season?
Well, this year, there are really four that you can point that to most. One is the say-on-pay resolutions related to executive compensation. The second would be a transparency of corporate political activity. Companies funnel a lot of money into the political sphere through direct channels and quite indirect and hidden channels, and that is coming to the fore. Third is the climate change, of course, everything related to climate change and the liabilities related to that for corporate activity. And then the liabilities that arise out of persistent toxins that are used in products. And, of course, we saw the great scare with lead in the children's toys. That's just one example, but there are a myriad of highly questionable, if not known, to be toxic chemicals that are routinely used in all the products that we handle and even consume every day. So those really are the four that have garnered the most. This past year, there were approximately 313 shareholder resolutions that were filed with 208 companies throughout the United States and Canada. And some of those in the course of dialogue ended up being withdrawn because companies recognized the efficacy and benefit of the proposal, and others have gone on to a vote. And so there's a whole mixed bag, but these are the four main topics, I would say.
What progress has been made in giving shareholders a greater say in corporate governance?
Well, you know, that's an area where there's a lot of work being done and progress being made. There have been a number of efforts to divide the CEO position from the chairman of the board of directors position because, you know, really the directors are supposed to provide oversight over management.
In an independent way.
And that's a very difficult thing to accomplish when the CEO is also chairman of the board. Washington Mutual's CEO, for instance, was chair of the board for 14 years, but a majority of Washington Mutual share owners voted for that separation, and so Washington Mutual went ahead and did that. And we attended that Washington Mutual meeting here in Seattle. Washington Mutual stock price is down 80% from last year, so naturally you're going to have the shareholders being a little testy. But I think it's worth noting that at Exxon, which has made huge profits during the past year, a similar resolution calling for the separation of those two positions garnered almost 40% of the vote. So, you know, shareholders really want to see this level of independence for the board and are really asserting it, whether or not the company has been performing well financially.
What progress has been made in requiring companies to reveal political contributions?
Significant amount of progress in that arena. I don't know how many companies were approached, but the campaign is now in its third year, really. And close to 50 companies in the Fortune 500 now have agreed to fully disclose their payments in this way. And how these payments are made is interesting. You know, of course, there's the things everybody knows about, the political action committees, the PACs. But there is a lot of what really can only be called money laundering happening by contributions being made to so-called nonprofit entities. A clear example would be the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And in Washington state, $2 million was given by some company, we don't yet know who, to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce then funneled that into TV attack ads in a race for the attorney general right here in Washington state, knocking out the person who was running as the target of those ads, Deborah Sim. And the lawsuits are still going on to divulge who gave that money. So that, in our sense, is an inappropriate use of shareholder money to engage in this in the civic process. I mean, citizens, we as people should be involved in democracy, not corporations. And Washington Mutual, we attended that annual meeting, which was perhaps their most contentious on record. And we had a proposal that we had submitted for consideration of shareholders on revealing and detailing all of the payments that were made to various and sundry groups by Washington Mutual. And Washington Mutual, in their wisdom, thought that this was a good idea. And so they actually worked with us. The resolution didn't appear on the ballot. They worked with us, and now you can go to their website and see a complete detailing of all of the money that goes into various programs and projects. And one of the things that they said to us was that they feel like as a company they're always being shaken down by the politicos who are trying to get, you know, money into their campaigns. And if they do on one side, then they have to do on the other. But now they have the freedom of saying, well, we'd love to, but we can't. We have this policy. Everything is clearly demonstrated, and we have to just play an even keel, clean board across the way. And so it gets them out of a lot more trouble than it gets them into, is really what it comes down to.
How have corporations altered their climate change policies in response to shareholder advocacy during the 2008 proxy season?
Well, that's a really interesting question. There's a lot of change, which I think all the listeners are likely to be aware of, and sort of focusing on which aspect of it is strictly a result of shareholder advocacy may be a little bit difficult. But I think it's worth noting that as of April, Ford Motor Company is the first U.S. auto company to spell out how it plans to reach the goal of reducing by at least 30% the greenhouse gas emissions from its vehicle fleet by 2020. That's a company that shareholders have really been engaging with. And again, from the shareholder point of view, we are long-term investors. We want Ford Motor Company to be successful over time. And we see that in order for Ford to be successful, it needs to be very forward-thinking about climate change issues and the likelihood of some sort of carbon tax or cap and trade and that sort of thing that's, you know, coming down the line. And so preparing for that is the best way for the company to be successful in the long term. And so Ford, I think, is a really good example of shareholders really pushing. Another thing that took place, more than 50 leading investors with more than $2.3 trillion under management. So these are some of the largest investors in the world, and including the Washington State Investment Board that has $60 billion under management, signed a letter to Congress calling for Congress to enact strong federal legislation to curb greenhouse gases. And these were companies, investors getting together and saying, we need an understood form so that we can go forward. We need laws. They need to be laid out. Then we can make our plans as to how to be successful going into the future. And that's from both sides, whether it's from the investor side or from the company side. So, you know, those are just a couple of things that are taking place, but they're just small examples of a very broad amount of change taking place in the market.
What types of climate change shareholder resolutions were put forward?
There's kind of a variety. Some are still around reporting. Companies that so far are not reporting what their greenhouse gas emissions are, then obviously reporting is really key. Some who are already reporting, then it becomes a question of developing a comprehensive greenhouse gas emission reduction target, or talking about, for the oil and gas companies, what sort of plan they have for becoming an industry leader in developing new technologies to create energy independence and those sorts of things. So it kind of depends company by company. But I think there were 54 global warming shareholder resolutions this year with U.S. companies. So that is a pretty big number in the field.
Just to give you a sense of how some of the voting has gone, if you look at Exxon, which received a lot of these resolutions, close to 31% voted for the development of a comprehensive greenhouse gas emission reduction target. More than just reporting, it's actually trying to create some traction in metrics and how they're going to make that process towards reduction. And close to 11% voted for a task force to investigate the consequences of climate change on their business model. And another 10% voted on a report on how the company would become that industry leader that Larry mentioned. And 27% plus voted for a policy to expand renewable energy research and development. And so these are the sorts of votes that are coming in. And again, putting it into the context of the voting demographics of the largest majority of votes being controlled directly or indirectly by management, these votes are quite significant.
Did mutual funds vote in favor of climate resolutions this year?
Things are moving in the right direction there. And it's worth noting that just a few years ago, mutual funds didn't have to report to their investors as to how they were voting on behalf of those same investors. Now they do have to report that, and the transparency is really key to some movement. So what you're seeing is some companies, some of the big investment companies, are now supporting climate change resolutions, for instance. Goldman Sachs is doing very well. Fidelity and Janus seem to be on the move. And then you've got companies like Morgan Stanley, State Street, that are investing in climate-related business activities and at the same time have opposed virtually all climate change resolutions at companies. So to some extent, the left hand and the right hand are not in proper communication at companies like Morgan Stanley and State Street. But all in all, it's a very positive movement. And again, that's why we continue to push for issues for transparency across the board, because when we as investors have that information at hand, we can make informed decisions about where we put our money.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2008 proxy season. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you comment on the efforts of shareholder advocates to persuade corporations to better address liability issues?
Bruce referenced that a little earlier around persistent toxics that are either in packaging or in the products themselves. And this is a place where I think it's easy for people to understand the possible outstanding liabilities over time that companies can incur. And those liabilities are going to be borne by the shareholders. And so it seems like a really good place for shareholders to get involved. And that's what we're seeing. So that there were 21 resolutions in 2008 compared with 13 in 2007. Some of these are around disclosure. You know, help us understand what you perceive, you management, perceive to be the potential liabilities of using these products, you know, and that's a great way of putting it on everybody's radar screen and again, getting the information out there. Companies are really required by law to disclose these sorts of liabilities, and this is one place where the SEC has really fallen down and is not holding companies to their obligations under law. Shareholders, therefore, are stepping in and trying to do that. And so also talking to toy makers about lead paint risks and what the liabilities may be around that. And the bisphenol A, which we did hear quite a bit about in the last couple of months, baby bottles that have this, you know, product that can leach into the milk. It just seems like something that a company would be asking for a whole lot of trouble for. So shareholders are trying to protect themselves by really pulling this information out.
And shareholders aren't alone. Of course, there are a whole array of environmental organizations and public health entities that are also keenly interested in these issues. And bisphenol A, for instance, is one of the elements that the Washington State Department of Ecology, first in the country to identify a list of persistent bioaccumulative toxic chemicals and to try to target the phasing out of all of those in the products and manufacture here in Washington State. And so shareholders are working in concert with a whole array of different organizations, public health and other organizations, to see these issues forward.
Overall, how well have companies responded to shareholder concerns during 2008?
Oh, that's a really, you know, it's kind of like the averages are hard. They talk about the person that died in a pool that averaged only 4 feet deep. At a deep end and a shallow end. Some companies are still quite recalcitrant, and others are, like Washington Mutual, in our experience, you know, embraced the idea of political disclosure. So I don't know if there's a real answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally they're used to making decisions looking forward. And as you plot the numbers of, say, average votes or votes on a particular issue over time, they're almost universally upward bound. And so that really is encouraging management to engage a little earlier in the process, because they look and say, well, we're either going to deal with them this year, or we're going to deal with them next year, or the year after, or the year after that, when they're getting 50% of the vote instead of 25. So generally, I think generally the trend is that companies are much more ready to engage, but it's not universal.
Last year, as a new trend in shareholder advocacy, you mentioned efforts to persuade charitable foundations to make their financial investments more in tune with their missions. To what extent are charitable foundations currently integrating their values with their investments?
I don't have a hard figure on that, but we do see the charitable entities becoming a lot more aware and asking a lot more questions, generating reports. And this is the first step in anything, is the awareness and the gathering of information. There are a few that have historically been interested and involved for some period of time, and they continue to be at the forefront and continue both to do their work in the shareholder engagement realm as well as being advocates within the charitable realm to kind of bring others along. I mean, we get calls now pretty consistently from charitable entities that are interested in using their rights in a way that, because it doesn't make sense. You know, when you think of a foundation, they have a 5% mandate to pay out 5% on an annual basis. And so why have the 95% of what you own, the corpus remaining, working in a way that's inimical to what you're trying to accomplish with the 5% of your granting. So there's a logical inconsistency there when entities, charitable entities, are not using shareholder tools and addressing social responsibility. But we do see that on the rise, although in the way that the public pension funds are now major players, there aren't any charitable entities that are major players. But the Rockefellers are very involved, and others as well, but that's probably the largest name that you would recognize.
What direction is shareholder advocacy likely to take in the 2009 proxy season?
Well, certainly up in terms of involvement and votes. We see more and more people becoming aware of money as the key lever. And it's interesting that we'll, of course, be through, by the time we meet next year, we'll be through a presidential election. And we have experienced the last two presidential election cycles as people being very disillusioned with the political process and recognizing ever more that money, this is a money culture. We're a capitalist system. And if you track the money, then you know more about what's really going on. And if you influence the flow of money, then you have the greatest chance of having an outcome. And so we've seen great interest generating exponentially, really, in shareholder engagement and social investment in the last decade and even half decade in particular. And I think in the next year, particularly fueled by the presidential election, I wouldn't be surprised if we see an even larger bump.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, definitely that shareholders matter, and even small shareholders can have a voice. And one of the interesting things that is developing now is the idea of being able to allocate your proxy to where people who might not be able to take the time to read through and study each of the issues and vote on each of the companies, but they could assign their proxy to someone who is. And there are moves afoot to create mechanisms, exchanges almost, if you will, to allocate and to aggregate proxies for like-minded but otherwise disparate and unconnected investors. So that is one of the things that that we see as a very positive trend that might actually gain some traction and come into real fruition in 2009. And whether or not that does, the individual shareholder, the institution, has more power than they think.
Yeah, please be active, because as share owners, we have opportunities and we have responsibilities, and we need to live up to those.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Diane, thank you. It's been terrific.
We have just been speaking with Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. For more information, call Bruce and Larry at area code 206-522-1944. Again, that's 206-522-1944. Or check on the web at www.newground.net. And additional websites of interest are sriadvocacy.org and socialinvest.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM. and kexp.org.